The question that goes around as I met people leading up to Christmas, and I'm sure you've either asked the question or been asked it, are you ready for Christmas? Now, usually when people ask you that, they mean what? Do you have all the presents and made all your travel arrangements and so forth? And after a while, you know, I got a little bit tired of saying, well, I try and prepare and get ready for Christmas a little differently. And I realized that people didn't really want to hear that. But have you gotten the presents is what they want to know. Are you ready for Christmas? This past week had a real big chuckle about getting ready for Christmas along the present trajectory, as it were. And a silly story, really, but I had to laugh. Our son plays hockey and went out with his team, the parents, out to have a little social after a game. And one of the assistant coaches was telling about how, in his words now, how stupid his brother was. His brother was very stupid when it came to getting gifts and getting ready for Christmas in that way. He recounted how on one particular occasion, one year, he waited till near midnight to start his shopping. And he went to Max Milk. He said, talk about stupid. What are you going to find at Max Milk that you're going to put under the tree to any satisfaction? Here, sweetheart, I spent a long time trying to choose the perfect gift for you. A slushie, some peanuts, and some chocolate milk. I don't think that will fly very well at all. Getting ready for Christmas is something that we in our congregation and many Christians around the world have been doing all through the season of Advent, trying to anticipate both hosting the scriptures that talk about the prophecy of one who will come to shake things up. Yes, there is peace and there's hope and all those things, but in order to crack open the possibilities of those flourishing, there needs to be a breaking of that which inhibits and circumscribes that kind of life. And so when we come tonight, we come to recognize that the story of our faith, this wondrous story of the Christmas tale, as it were, is a very potent one. And it is one that accommodates both song and silence. And I want to explore that a little bit. It is, in a sense, a paradox. And you know that a paradox is something that allows two seemingly contrary things to be true at the same time. We see this in the world, certainly, of physics. The very light that we know and see and use and analyze is both made up of wave and particle, both seemingly not related to each other or not able to exist together, but it does. A paradox, two things seemingly opposing actually being true. And tonight, silence and song cohere in this story. When we look at the full breadth of what we are celebrating, the story read to us before by Felicity and the one we know so well and all that surrounds that Christmas story, we know that even in our carols that this tension is held up. The silence aspect of Christmas, that invitation to be contemplative, to reflect, to be quiet. O little town of Bethlehem. One of the verses, how silently the wondrous gift is given. Silent night, holy night. It is an invitation to quiet all of the busyness and all those things that take us in trajectories of hectic, scurrying paces that deny the opportunity for our hearts and our souls to settle well. We see this happening in Mary, as we heard in the story. Mary listened and beheld all that happened to her. And we're told that she treasured this up in her heart. That phrase is a very potent one. Hosting, harboring, pondering, digesting, cogitating, really taking time to understand what is this we are celebrating. And that is an invitation for all of us, especially those of us who find this a difficult Christmas to celebrate. Those of us who want, perhaps, at the deepest part of our longings to be by ourselves. Because it just does not ring as true in terms of all the merriment as it has all the other years. Perhaps because a loved one has died this year. Perhaps because you have lost a job. or lost a relationship, or you have found yourself in circumstances you could never have anticipated, and you are beginning to question both identity, vocation, calling, your place in the world. Whatever are the circumstances, it is appropriate that the Christmas story accommodates that silence, that pondering, that wondering, that grieving. This past week, I was invited by the morning show at CBC to talk to them on air about what Blue Christmas means, what the churches that practice this service of reflection and contemplation. And I shared some important things I thought about what it is that the Christian gospel offers in the face of merriment and ho, ho, ho and jolly, 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 when all you want to do is to retreat from all of that. And I reminded the audience, and I would want to share with you tonight, that the Christmas story indeed is not foreign to that. In fact, it resists other depictions. Depictions such as, well, you know, Christmas is just for children. Or Christmas is just about getting together with family. Those depictions of it do not in any way do justice to the story and the breadth and depth of it. It was reminding the radio audience that if you look at the story and its details and its context in first century Palestine, you realize that the very things that we experience of hardship are already accounted for. The very story that was read about Mary and Joseph having to go and leave the place where they were living to be registered to their birthplace in Bethlehem and leave Galilee suggests something that we know about those times. It was customary for clans and groups and families to grow up and to take on the vocation of the father. Joseph has to go away. He is a carpenter. Carpenters not only worked with wood, but they worked also as masonry and so forth. But where he was in Bethlehem, it is clear that there was not sufficient work, that there was an economic crisis. And so he has to move and go to where the jobs are. That is why he returns home. So the Christmas story already anticipates and accommodates the fact that hardship and poverty and economic distress is part of the story. If you are experiencing that or know people who are, they are not to feel that Christmas is not for them. It encompasses and imagines them smack dab in the middle of the story. We know in the broader context of this story that Herod, when he finds out indeed that there has been this king, as it were, born, he is incensed and determined to secure his power, issues a decree to his soldiers to go about and to kill every male child under the age of 2. So the Christmas story knows something about violence and knows something about death and about grieving. If that is your circumstance, you belong to the Christmas story. It knows about displacement. It knows about those who don't ever feel like they belong or are at the center of attention. For the shepherds themselves, the characters in this story are meant intentionally to indicate that those on the outside and those ostracized are imagined at the center of the story. For shepherds in first century Palestine and before and shortly after were seen as scruffians and outcasts. Their testimony was not valid in court. There were those who were despised. And yet it is to this group of people that the word and the announcement comes. The heavenly angels declare that a good news is coming. The Christmas story accommodates and anticipates the full breadth and vicissitudes of human drama and pain and joy and celebration. There is no one here, no matter what you go through, depression or anxiety, frustration, displacement, addiction, whatever it is, the Christmas story is here to host you. For if this God decides to come into the meek and mild context of a stable, of a dirty dungeon, as it were, of a place where animals are, a cave filled with dung and flies and all those things that are the real stuff of animal dwelling,
then it tells us theologically that this God is prepared to go anywhere, to be born anywhere that it takes to convince you and me and the world that this God means business about love, about transformation. There's nothing too dirty, too off limits, too removed to prevent this God from coming and being born in the midst of it. So what is your story tonight? Whatever is your story, it coheres with the story of Christmas and the story of God's deep desire to be born in your heart, in your life, in your ethics, in your choices, in your relationships, in your economics, in your vocation, in your studies, in your school, in your silence, in your pain, in your depression, in your grief. This God will make a way to find you where you are. It is a Christmas story that is born both in silence but also celebration. Because our hymns and our carols also speak about joy to the world, the Lord is come. Hark the herald angels sing. It is also about proclaiming and piercing the dismay and the pall of despair that often covers our world. It is true that we are somewhat disappointed, those of us, and I think there are many here who would join that, with what came out of Copenhagen. There are many who are concerned about our environment and the ecological stewardship that we are meant to be about as a human community. We cannot fool around with this. And yet, even as that is the case, there is cause for celebration. The celebration comes from those small steps that are being taken, perhaps not quickly enough, but there are many people and there is a swell of momentum around the world that is getting on board with this gift of a planet that we have and how we're meant to live on it. So we look at the Christmas story and we begin to see apertures of opportunities for celebration and for joining with others in similar ways. The Christmas story is to the Christian faith what Garrison Keillor, radio personality and poet and writer in the States, says. The Christmas story is to the Christian faith what the Kryptonian heritage is to Superman. Now, maybe you think that's an odd kind of expression or analogy. But no, it is not going to enable us to leap tall buildings and stop locomotives with our chests. But it is this story, about the profound inbreaking of God into every vicissitude and every reality of human life that enables us to withdraw from the penchant for fear and to risk those commands that God has given us through Christ to love one another, to forgive our enemy and love our enemy, to make peace instead of war, to overcome those isms that divide us, racism and sexism, ageism, all of those things that divide us. It is this story that reminds us that with the courage of a love that is active and energetic and powerful, it can pierce any barrier. Some of you may have heard today replayed on dispatches an excerpt from Martin Luther King's sermon, December 24th, 1967, about 4 months before he was assassinated. It was one of the massy lectures that he gave. And in it, he was speaking about the interdependence of the human community. That we have to resist the lie that we are independent from each other. Resist the lie that we are cut off from each other, that we are so different. It is that interdependence, that dream of coming together and recognizing that every day of our lives, we have been made indebted to the giftedness of others. Imagine your life from morning till night. The products you use, the roads you drive on, the car you use, the cell phone, the BlackBerry, whatever. It is the ingenuity and the labor and the mining and the transporting and the crafting and the imagining and the constructing of other human beings around the world that makes it possible for you and for me to live every single day. So that profound interdependence renders us
by virtue of the edict of God's love and God's call to live in such a way that honors that interdependence, that respects and cherishes the indebtedness that each of us has to the other. The Christmas story is pivotal and essential and seminal to the very way we understand how we ought to live in this world. And so this is a story both in song and in silence. It's a story that can be a little whimsical at times, some may say. I would ponder using this particular reference. One of the things that we like to watch as a family, and we haven't for some time, keep missing it, but I'm sure you're familiar with How the Grinch Stole Christmas. You like the Grinch? It seems to be coming on earlier and earlier every year. I just keep missing it. I should put this little notice out. If you find out when it's on, call me. Because I keep missing this Grinch thing. But there's a part in there that talks about the heart of the Grinch. It goes like this. The Grinch hated Christmas. The whole Christmas season. Now, please don't ask the reason. No one really knows the reason. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. It could be perhaps his shoes were too tight. But I think the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. In order for us to truly and authentically embrace the paradox of the Christmas story, a silence and song of celebration and contemplation, of joy and exhilaration, of grief and suffering, we need the heart capacity to host it. And God specializes in heart surgery and heart life and heart hope and heart power. And the invitation to you and to me tonight is to allow the fullness, the paradox, the breadth, and the joy and the impetus of the Christmas story to come flooding into our hearts so that we may live potent lives of difference all year round. For the call is not only to be generous at Christmas. The call is not only to be nice to your family at Christmas. The call is not only to be involved in the needs of the oppressed and the poor at Christmas. The call is not only to feel tenderly and romantic at Christmas. I like the romantic stuff, don't get me wrong. The importance is that somehow we learn how to steward and host and live this out all through the year. That's why, you see, Christmas is not just for children. That's why Christmas is not just a time to get together and have a party and a good time. That's why Christmas is a whole lot more. It is about angels and shepherds and a frightened teenager who accepts and then rejoices in what has happened to her, but treasures it all up. It's about displacement, economic hardship. It's about death and violence. It's about all those things. So the stuff of life and the headlines of our daily reality as a world are gathered up into the imagination of this Christmas story and offered back to us that we may use the prism of love and commitment and covenant and relationship one with the other to imagine how we live our lives and steward our vocations, whether a student, as retired person, as active worker. May you and I be blessed this Christmas with the fulsomeness of God's grace that comes into our heart to make it big. Not two sizes too small, but sizes necessary for the mandate of transforming the world. Amen.